Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, joined by rock and roll expert, fellow Clevelander, Frank Ost. Frankie, welcome back. How are you today?
I'm great, and it's good to be here with you.
Deep Purple is one of your favorite groups, isn't it?
Yeah, they're an excellent group. Probably a little underrated over the years. A lot gets said about like Smoke on the Water, but boy, they've got a lot else good stuff going for them.
Smoke on the Water is still one of my favorite rock instrumental intros of all time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So today in rock history, May 9th, 1959, Wayne Newton made his Las Vegas debut at the Fremont Hotel. The first booking, set to last only 2 weeks, wound up going 3 years.
Wow, and that's 59?
Oh my God. He was only 16 years old at the time.
Good grief.
16, he can't even gamble.
I know.
But he could perform.
Sure could.
And boy, did he make a career out of that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was made for Vegas.
Brian Epstein met in 1962 with EMI producer George Martin. Martin signed the Beatles through record demos in another month or so, their first recording contract.
Nice.
So in 1990, Sinead O'Connor refused to perform on Saturday Night Live when she learned that Andrew Dice Clay would be the guest host.
Well, now, that's one I won't blame her for, because he was really out there.
Yeah, he was raunchy.
Yeah, he was. And I was happy to see his career kind of just fade away.
1998, Puff Daddy and Jimmy Page were the musical guests on the same show, and then they performed their collaboration of Come With Me.
Oh,
isn't
okay.
That cool? Yeah. Ozzy Osbourne and his wife Sharon called it quits, and their 33 years of marriage ended on this date in 2016. 33 years of marriage.
Why quit now?
I don't know. Little Richard, one of the founding fathers of rock and roll, passed away on this date 2 years ago, age 87 years old.
Yeah, what a classic showman and...
Tremendous performer.
I mean, just fantastic stuff.
Birthdays, Mike Wallace. Remember him, the host of 60 Minutes?
Absolutely,
you
yes.
You always hated if you were a business or somebody who's on the edge. You never wanted to see the 60 Minutes crew showing up in your lobby on
absolutely.
Monday morning.
Absolutely, and if I remember correct, he also did the show of the 20th Century, where they used to do like biographies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
David Prater, Sam and Dave, passed away in 1988 at age 50, but he was born in this date in 1937. Sonny Curtis, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, he was in the band. He also wrote Love Is All Around, remember the Mary Tyler Moore theme?
Wow, what a... Ooh, go from one to the other there.
You can see her throwing her hat up in the air.
I can.
Statue for it, too, in Minneapolis. He also wrote More Than I Can Say, which was redone by Leo Sayre in 1980.
Sure.
And Bobby Fuller's I Fought the Law.
I'll be darned. Yeah. So about every 5 to 10 years, he would have something.
Something cooking.
Something cooking.
1940, birthday, James L. Brooks, the director of Broadcast News. He won an Academy Award for writing, producing, and directing the film Terms of Endearment, which I've never seen. But I have seen Broadcast News.
I think I've seen them both. And I don't remember too much about either of them, but I believe I saw them both back in the day.
Broadcast News is funny. He's an executive producer for Taxi and also the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
That's
James
right.
L. Brooks.
Yeah.
Tommy Rowe, Dizzy, you know, and Jam Up and Jelly Tide.
Sure.
Turns 80. He was born in 1942. Richie Furay of Buffalo Springfield and Poco was born in 1944. And this will make my wife happy, Clint Holmes. Playground in My Mind.
Oh,
remember?
Absolutely. Playground in My Mind.
Former number one, former one-hit wonder, I should say. Top five hit for him, and he's 76 years old today. Billy Joel also shares a birthday. He's 73 today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Billy's not too old then. He's not that farther, much older than I am.
I know. I wonder if he'll be coming to Cleveland anytime soon. Progressive Field could be open for a date or two, don't you think?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Why not?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, Frankie, 2022. I'm going to start with your favorite, Dolly Parton.
Well, what can you possibly say about Dolly Parton and the Rock Hall? I think you said it best. If you're going to let Dolly Parton in, you might as well just call it a Music Hall of Fame. Or a Pop Music Hall of Fame or whatever. But it certainly has nothing to do. She has nothing to do at all with rock and roll. And the fact that she's in and there's... bands, you know, as we've enumerated, a million times, but bands like Jethro Tull that are nowhere near the place. I don't understand. I will never understand. It's insane to me.
Eminem, what do you think?
That's fine. It's, of course, as we've mentioned, not my cup of tea, but certainly my daughter knows him and likes a lot of what she knows about him. So I have no problem with that. It's a genre that's going to continue to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well let Eminem in because he's probably one of the best at it.
You got Jay-Z in there, Tupac. You might as well have
sure.
Eminem.
Absolutely.
He was one of the best at it.
Yep.
Duran Duran, they led the fan voting really right from the start.
And you did an impassioned plea for them.
I did indeed.
It's absolutely fitting that they get in. I like the band. Like we've said a few times, we could have heard a little bit more from them, perhaps.
Yeah.
But what we did here, definitely rock and roll, and definitely a fun band.
Along with Save Peter Gabriel, Robert Palmer, video era, you know.
Sure, sure.
So, and they had a really good comeback in the 90s, a couple of tunes in the early 90s. But you haven't heard much from them since.
No, you haven't. But that's not unusual.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, definitely.
Let's get some other 80s groups in there now, or acts. Billy Idol leaps to mind.
Sure.
Now, Pat Benatar was more or less the 80s. She started out in late 79, right in there.
Yes, I consider her 80s, definitely.
80s. She's a rocker.
And, you know, MTV basically made her career.
Yeah.
I mean, she was made for MTV. It just fit perfect.
Still recording, still yep. out on the road. Just finished up a tour last year. Hopefully she'll be doing something again pretty soon.
Absolutely.
With her husband. Lionel Richie, that was a surprise because he was like 8th or 9th or 7th in the fan voting the whole time. Yet he kind of a forgotten soul. I mean, he had a little comeback in the early 2000s. He was really, really big in the 80s. And, of course, Commodores.
He was huge. If you didn't live through it, it was one of those, almost you had to be there. But he was huge for a time. In fact, he was so big that he was doing, the Grammy Awards. He was the host of many of these things. And everybody knew him. And from the Commodore days, lots of good tunes, but, you know, again, does he quite fit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I don't know, but why not?
The younger generation probably knows him better as one of the judges on American Idol.
Exactly.
The ceremonies will take place in L.A., like we thought, early November.
And again, I'll say one more thing about it. Why did they feel the need to have 15 people honored this year?
Too many.
That's way too many. They're not 15 people out there every year that deserve the honor of being in a Hall of Fame or being part of the Hall of Fame. I don't get it. And I, of course, wonder about all the people, myself included, who started bands after watching Harry Belafonte on Ed Sullivan.
Right.
How he became an influence, I'll never know.
The Banana Boat song influenced a lot of Yankee fans, I suppose. They play that when they're trying to drum up a rally.
Yeah, and Ray Davies loves to do it in concert. Mm-hmm. He loves to do that Deo thing.
Wonderful.
And maybe that was it. Maybe that's the influence.
They really ought to cap it at 3, maybe 4.
Absolutely.
Throw an early influence.
Absolutely. Yep.
Person in there, an Armin Erdogan Award this year, by the way, went to Sugar Hill Records and R&B singer Sylvia. Remember her from Pillow Talk?
Barely.
Yeah. She started that Sugar Hill gang, the early rap artists of the 80s.
Right, right.
And won the Erdogan Award this year, along with record executive producer Jimmy Iovine. I thought he was already in for that, but I guess not.
He's one of the few that really was a big influence.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about him many times on this show.
Sure.
As producer, engineer, that kind of thing. He even was the muse of some of the Rolling Stones stuff from the early 70s.
Wow. So he goes back a ways.
Yes, definitely.
Carly Simon. It was good to see that they haven't forgotten all the acts from the 70s and just moved right into the 80s. I think she's sort of deserving. You're So Vain, it's a 50-year-old classic.
Yeah, it's a classic. We're still trying to figure out quite who it's all about. She's always been sly about that, and we now know that it's about a number of different guys. It's not just one.
And finally, Eurythmics. They were in the top 5 of fan voting all along. I wasn't surprised that they were that high or that they got in.
Another group that I like the Eurythmics. thought the world of them when they came out, but boy, they didn't really have much. There was maybe three, maybe four albums, and they were gone. So that's another one that, you know, maybe is a bit of a stretch in my opinion, because of their catalog. They just don't have a big one. But again, I did like what I heard, that's for sure.
Well, then I think Human League or Howard Jones ought to be getting some.
Howard Jones has just as many hits, that's for sure.
Download Discovery. It's I'm Frankie. You got a good one from Duke Ellington.
Yes, known as one of the greatest musical minds of the 20th century. This is Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue, and it's a live version.
Say that five times fast.
Exactly. Now, this may be the most important recording in jazz history. You see, big bands at this time had gone out of popularity, so much so that this incredible band was taking gigs at skating rinks to keep busy.
Wow.
Ellington accepted the job at the 1956 Newport Jazz Festival after he found out that Columbia Records was recording the whole event. So it was Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue that were kind of shoved together.
Mm-hmm.
On July 7th, 1956, the band's set in general and this song in particular marked a rebirth of his career. Audiences at Newport literally started a riot, with people dancing in the aisles, on their seats, and even on the stage.
Wow.
Pandemonium had taken over, and it's all captured on this recording. Duke soon appeared on the cover of Time magazine, and his career was completely revitalized. I urge you to seek out and listen to this recording. As Duke himself put it, after that night, I was born in 1956 at the Newport Festival.
Yeah, they were big fans there. Career was reinvigorated, wasn't it?
It sure was. And just to listen to that as a player of jazz and to hear the awesome players that were on this record and to know that at this point they were literally hanging on by a thread.
Yeah. So mine is Wild Cherry. You remember Play That Funky Music?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Then they had Hold On With Strings.
Okay.
The next year. But this came from kind of out of the blue in 1979 in the summer. It's called Try a Little Piece of My Love. And it's from the album Only the Wild Survive. Great beat, not necessarily a disco song, but out during that disco era.
Sure.
Summer of 79 was Bad Girls and Hot Stuff, and everybody was doing disco, except for the Knack and the Cars.
That's right.
And Billy Joel. The Boss was around. And
sure.
Wild Cherry 2, great little follow-up to Play That Funky Music. It only came out 3 years too late.
Yeah, that's a shame.
That was about it for Wild Cherry, but they had a short-lived career. I thought they were heading toward bigger things.
Yeah, good group headed, like you say, a couple of good singles. And this one sounds like a good one to look up.
Yeah, it's on the Epic label, Wild Cherry, Try a Piece of My Love, and you had Duke Ellington, Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue, the live version.
Correct.
This week's Download Discovery. Rock releases the week of May 9th, some good summertime stuff. Rio by Duran Duran, 1982. Were you a big fan of Duran Duran, or at least their videos?
I enjoyed them. They were, they were a fun group, had some hits, and definitely had some good tunes that were not just, kind of that M.O.R. sound that was going on there. They actually did a little bit of rocking, too.
So. I like their stuff from early 90s, too. But Duran Duran's, some of those videos you can conjure up in your mind right now, a lot of them were produced by Godley and Cream, remember, from 10cc.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The soundtrack to Woodstock, you can conjure up what that was all about. 1970 is released. Of course, Woodstock happened the year before. Hendrix, Are You Experienced? 1967.
Yep.
Stones, Exile on Main Street, 1972. What'd you think of that album?
Terrific album, and boy, like I said in the past, just caught them right at the peak of their career, really.
Do you have that in your collection still?
Absolutely.
How about Olivia Newton-John, If You Love Me, Let Me Know?
I don't think I have that one.
Elton John's 21 of 33. That means that was his 21st album, compilation, whatever, by the time he was 33 years old.
That's right,
That
yes.
was released in 1980. That features Little Genie, one of my favorite songs. Sounds a little like Daniel, but I still like it a lot.
No, it's good too.
Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms, 1985.
Yeah, another good record there.
The Clash, Combat Rock, 1982, and the Moody Blues, also 1981, Long Distance Voyager. That had The Voice on there, and Meanwhile, and Gemini Dream.
Yeah, that's right.
Good summertime stuff coming out in various years this week. All right, Frankie, time for Best Instrumentals. One from me comes from 1979, and yours comes from Jethro Tull, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. A tune called Boré by Jethro Tull. Now, this is basically a flute solo written somewhere around 1710. Yeah, that's 1710.
At 1710.
By Johann Sebastian Bach.
Bach.
Ah. Originally composed for the lute, it was arranged for Jethro Tull by Ian Anderson for the 1969 album Stand Up. Was a little bit of music that came to Anderson literally through the floorboards of his apartment in London. Let me explain. There was a media student in the room below his who kept playing this over and over. This refrain from the Bach tune, Boré in E minor. He played it on classical guitar, but he only ever got the first kind of bit, the first 8 or 9 measures, and he never progressed beyond that basic thing. So, of course, Ian Anderson made him interested. He looked it up, and he decided that he would try to used that little tune as some way, some kind of starting point for an instrumental piece, and the classical jazz tune Bourré was born.
Bourré.
Yes.
September 1969, late in the month, released here in the States. The album sold well. It was number 20 here in the States and number one in the UK, and did very well and elsewhere overseas. It's a whimsical little song.
Yeah, it's a fun song, and you'll hear it from time to time played on the radio, but it's really a neat little instrumental.
Mine is Rockestra Theme, Paul McCartney and Wings from Back to the Egg. That album didn't do so well. It had Arrow Through Me and Getting Closer, and
right.
It was a good album. I really liked it. Back to the Egg meant back to the roots of rock and roll for him. He had a lot of help on here, too. David Gilmour, John Paul Jones, John Bonham, Pete Townsend, Gary Brooker, Kenny Jones, many others played on this.
Yeah, in fact, I liked the song so much, I bought Back to the Egg, but I also bought the Kampuchea, the Concerts for the People of Kampuchea, where this was the highlight tune on it.
Yeah. You know, it was a Grammy winner, Frankie, for Best Rock Instrumental Performance. It begins side two of the album, and it kind of came out of nowhere for me. I really like Paul McCartney.
Yep.
And, boy, that song just rocks. It's a great little tune to start that side.
It certainly does. It kind of reminds you of the rock portion of Live and Let Die, that kind of feel to it. Yes.
Yeah. Now, he originally wanted to collaborate on this with Keith Moon, but he passed away just a month before recording was set to begin.
Oh, that's right, yes.
For the Back to the Egg album. So I have Rockestra Theme by Paul McCartney and Wings, and you've got Bourré by Jethro Tull. Psychedelic versus pop. I like this category, Frankie. The week of September 21st, 1968.
Yes.
School had just begun for me. I was a third grader trudging up to St. Clement's Elementary. Number five that week was the pop song 1-2-3 Red Light by 1910 Fruit Gum Company. We've had them on before, but originally known as Jekyll and the Hydes after member Frank Jekyll. The group disbanded like 2 years later. They did have Simon Says and Indian Giver. Those were their other two big hits of that bubblegum group.
That's right, yeah.
You know, this song, 1-2-3 Red Light, was actually covered by the Talking Heads, who would play this at one of their early, early shows.
That kind of sounds like them, yeah. Could have been something they do.
And 1-2-3 Red Light, follow-up to this top five hit was called Goody Goody Gumdrops.
Nice.
Boy, that's bubblegum all the way, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I tried to prove my love.
So that is number five song the week of September 21st. 1, 2, 3, Red Light, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. And who do you have at number four, Psychedelic?
Number four that week. It was Hush by Deep Purple.
This week's featured artist.
You got it. Now, Hush was a song written by American composer and musician Joe South for recording artist Billy Joe Royal. Now, his country-flavored take on the song was not a hit, but it was heard by Deep Purple guitarist Richie Blackmore while he was living in Hamburg, Germany. Added keyboardist John Lord, that whacka-whacka thing on the organ was something I started doing with my previous band, the Artwoods. I played it almost like a set of conga drums. The rhythm of Hush is kind of like a samba. Now, the lead singer on this is their original vocalist, Rod Evans, who held that position for their first three albums. This was the period where they were really trying to find their sound. And they did a number of great covers. This one, Kentucky Woman, and River Deep, Mountain High. As I said, they were definitely a group that was looking for a sound, and you'll find out later in this episode.
So number five was 1, 2, 3, Red Light, and number four, Deep Purple with Hush. Time for One Hit Wonders, Frankie Skylark from Vancouver, Canada. Remember Wildflower? That was also out in 1973, but we saved it for the One Hit Wonder category.
She's faced the hardest times you could imagine, and many times her eyes fought back the tears. And when her youthful world was about to fall in, each time her slender shoulders bore the weight of all a sorrow no one hears, still rings in midnight silence in her ears. Let her cry.
Peaked at number nine in the spring of that year. Number one at the time was Frankenstein.
Okay.
Featuring Skylark did a young keyboard player and composer named David Foster.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Never charted again, did the group in the top 10 after this top 10 hit, rather. They split up after a poor reception for their follow-up album. But the song's been covered by nearly a dozen artists over the years and received strong airplay from our friends up north at CKLW.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Definitely.
Spotlight year 1973, kind of coming to an end. You know, we've gone through them all. I thought we already did 73. It turns out we did, but way back in season two when we talked about, like, David Bowie, that was our featured artist. But we've hit on 73 over and again. But still, big hits that year, Paul McCartney and Wings, Live and Let Die, Helen Wheels, My Love.
Oh, great stuff.
That was a big year for Jim Croce. Unfortunately, he passed away late summer of 73. Time in a Bottle, Bad Bad Leroy Brown, Elton John, Croc Rock, Daniel, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. A couple of great albums, weren't they?
Just on a roll.
Roberta Flack, Killing Me Softly, You Are the Sunshine of My Life, and Superstition, which broke a string of 10 years without a number one for
That's
Stevie
right.
Wonder.
Yeah.
Superstition did. Drift Away, That'd Still Be Gray, not one of my favorites, but you still hear it everywhere today. Paul Simon had a good year.
Oh,
Kodachrome, and Loves Me Like a Rock. George Harrison, Give Me Love, Photograph, Ringo Starr.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff from 73. A lot of big hits that year. A lot of big hits.
And a lot of ex-Beatles stuff, yeah.
Yep. Smoke in the Water, we'll talk about that later. The Last Song by Edward Bear. Yesterday Once More and Sing, The Carpenters.
That's right,
and then
yeah.
they had Top of the World later on. Reeling in the Years, so We're an American Band, You're So Vain, Right Thing to Do, Shambhala, Diamond Girl, No More Mr. Nice Guy, Feeling Stronger Every Day, Just You and Me. That's just some of them. What a great year for hits, and we are going to hit on some great soul music in just a minute.
Absolutely,
but you got
yeah.
some good albums for me that year, don't you?
Yeah. Starting at number five, we have Lady Sings the Blue, the original blues, the original soundtrack by Diana Ross.
Yeah.
Her loving portrayal of Billie Holiday was a hit with moviegoers and record buyers. Number four that year, No Secrets by Carly Simon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this album is the one that made Carly an international star. It sat at number one for 5 weeks, went platinum, and spawned the international hit, You're So Vain.
Yeah, that was one of your favorite album covers.
It was, and people are still trying to figure out what or who You're So Vain is about.
Uh-huh. I guess she whispered it in someone's ear once who won a charity event, and she said, if you donate a certain amount of money, I'll tell you who it was about.
Really? Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, but he's not talking.
He hasn't broke yet, huh? the number three record, The World Is a Ghetto by War.
Oh, I love War.
Yeah. Another album that broke a group to worldwide fame. The Title Cut and the Cisco Kid were huge hits.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Brothers and Sisters by the Allman Brothers Band. Now, after losing all-time great guitar player, Duane Allman, to a tragic accident, this album showed that the group was far from done. It has their biggest hit, Ramblin' Man, and the AOR hit, Jessica, and would be their only number one album. Finally, at number one, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. Well, they don't get much bigger than this one. Critically loved and beloved by rock fans everywhere, this is the record that made Pink Floyd superstars. To date, it has been on the Billboard album charts for 958 non-consecutive years.
Goodness. Weeks.
Or weeks. That's over 18 years,
gosh.
And is one of the biggest selling albums of all time.
Produced by Alan Parsons.
That's right, absolutely.
Want to hear some great soul music? The Isleys are a featured artist in episode 8 of this year. That Lady, remember that song?
Oh, great song.
Pillow Talk by Sylvia, The Stories, Brother Louie.
Yeah.
Superfly, Curtis Mayfield, talked about the Cisco Kid, Gladys Knight, Midnight Train to Georgia, Neither One of Us. Why Can't We Live Together? Timmy Thomas. That's a great tune.
Everybody wants to live together. Why can't we?
OJ's Love Train, me and Mrs. Jones, Billy Paul, Billy Preston, Will It Go Round in Circles.
Oh, great, great tune.
Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On.
Yeah.
You know, Barry White, I'm Gonna Love You a Little Bit More. He had a lot of hits in the mid, early 70s, didn't he?
Sure.
Stevie Wonder, and of course the Four Tops, and Ain't No Woman Like the One I Got.
And you know, you ask what we kind of lost with disco. Well, those are the songs we lost with disco.
Boy,
it's really, really sad because those are just great tunes.
Oh, great tunes. Want to hear some campy songs?
There was some of that, too.
Tie Yellow Ribbon, number one for the whole year.
Yeah.
Playground in My Mind, Oh Babe, What Would You Say by Hurricane Smith.
Oh, didn't they have a megaphone on that one?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yes.
Cover of the Rolling Stone, that was also out late 72, but it carried over to 73. That's Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
Sure.
Monster Mash, Bobby Boris Pickett.
Yeah, the kind of rebirth of that song.
Yeah, that just came out of nowhere. It was out in the summer, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was no reason for it to be. All of a sudden, they just started playing it again.
The only reason I can think of is because Frankenstein was such a hit in the spring of 73. Maybe radio stations just pulled this out, maybe by mistake even.
It's possible. I don't know. Yeah.
Under their spooky tunes category. I don't know. Little Willie, The Sweets.
Oh, great tune.
The Morning After, that's from the Poseidon Adventure, which I think I saw 7 or 8 times in the summer of 73.
Nice.
And Sweet Gypsy Rose by Tony Orlando and Dawn. Get Down, You've Been a Bad Dog Baby.
Oh, my God.
Gilbert
O'Sullivan. I do remember that song.
Donna Fargo, Funny Face, The 12th of Never by Donny Osmond, and Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy by Bette Midler.
Yep.
Just some of them from 73. Great instrumentals. Talked about Frankenstein and Jessica. Remember Hocus Pocus?
Oh,
my focus.
Absolutely do.
You never want to get that pared down, the KTEL version. You want to hear the album cut, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. With all in all its glory.
Dueling Banjos and also Sprach Zarathustra.
Yep, yep.
Also Sprach Zarathustra.
Yeah, we've talked about both of those, haven't we?
So that's a good year of music, 1973. That's just some of them.
Yep, great year and wonderful memories.
Yeah, it was a good year. Good summer, too. Featured artist time, Frankie, Deep Purple. Good name for a group, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Formed in London and Hertford in 1968, and then quickly came out with their debut album, Shades of Deep Purple, but they wanted to go in a different direction, didn't they?
Yeah.
After Hush was a great song to begin, though, don't
you
think?
What a fantastic song. It says a lot about them that they made a song like that right out of the box. I mean, that's a really good tune.
Two takes, too. That's amazing.
Yep.
Well, we were talking maybe the recording studio said, okay, guys, you know, we got the Stones coming in pretty soon. Let's wrap it up here. You got two takes left in you. That's it. So that harder, straight ahead rock and roll sound came out in 1970 with the album Deep Purple in Rock.
That's right, yeah.
So do you have any of those albums still? Or
I used to have a couple of them, but no, I don't have any of them.
They had one of the live albums that they came out with. Talk about that in a minute. Hall of Fame Class of 2016, finally.
That's right.
They came in with Chicago and Cheap Trick and Steve Miller.
That's a good class.
That was a good class.
Yeah, I like that.
John Lord, classically trained Hammond organ player.
That's right,
Richie Blackmore, guitar songwriter. You know, a lot of their hits were written, all the guys in the band had writing credit to that. Mm-hmm. I know Ian Gillan had a lot to do with it as the lead singer after Rod Evans left. He split with the band, Rod did, and was rarely seen in public again.
Yeah, I've seen online where people have actually wondered whatever happened to him because they've had a heck of a time trying to track him down.
Yeah. Roger Glover was with the band from 69 to 73. He left the band after Ian Gillan, with Ian Gillan, after their Japanese tour in 1973. So the guys didn't stay around together too long.
Right.
Yet they have gotten back together over the years. Ian Pace played drums. We talked about Ian Gillan, who was the lead singer and lyricist. He wrote Smoke in the Water with the other fellas and Highway Star, Space Truckin', and was filling the role of Jesus, the original Jesus, on the soundtrack to Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Nick Simper, bass and backing vocals. David Coverdale joined later.
Yes, he did.
And from only a couple of years, 1974 to 76, that was after the big Smoke in the Water days, after the departure of Ian Gillan. Then he formed Whitesnake and had them as his backing band originally, and then that just became Whitesnake. You know, Is This Love, Here I Go Again, Tawny Kitaen on the
absolutely,
on the car, you
know. Yeah. He was Mrs. Tawny Kitaen
for a while, I believe. You know, deserving of the Rock Hall, and what took him so long to get in, that's a story for that we've gone over before. But they put out 20-plus albums. The latest was released in 2020 called Whoosh.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize they had anything out anytime
but
recently.
2020, the pandemic and everything like
That's
that.
True.
So Shades of Deep Purple, Machine Head, that was a good album, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was kind of, obviously their biggest album of all time, but also one of the greatest heavy metal albums of all time, really.
Highway Star, Smoke mm-hmm. in the Water, Space Truckin'. Critics in the UK not overly impressed with their debut album, though. Maybe that's why they kind of changed things up a little bit. They were, like you said, looking for their sound.
Yes, they were.
They were gaining popularity in the U.S., but the critics said that the group's stage excesses and stuff they did, you know, on stage would not translate well to the British audiences. I guess they were more reserved over there. So
I guess. I don't know.
Who knows? Shades did hit number 24 here in the States, and their first American tour was a success. They opened for Cream for the band's farewell tour. I did not know that.
That's great.
That's cool. Deep Purple's first American television appearance, get this, was on The Dating Game. on ABC.
I didn't even know there were bands that showed. I don't remember there being a musical segment to the Gating Game.
Me either. They were the first rock band to ever appear on the show, maybe the only, but that's because band member John Lord was one of the contestants that week.
Oh, okay.
So they all showed up. And
they must have done some kind of, special thing. So that's pretty ridiculous.
Remember Child in Time? That more than 10-minute song closing outside one of Deep Purple and Rock. You know, that was released on my 10th birthday. For some reason, I didn't get that as a birthday gift. I think I was getting a banana seat pipe or something. A blue glove instead or whatever. Fireball, 1971, did well. 1971 brought in number 32. Machine Head. Parts of it were recorded at the Stones' mobile recording studio.
That's right. The famous story one, about where Smoke on the Water came from. Yes. Yeah.
Number 7 in the Billboard Top 200 album charts, double platinum, is Machine Head. I think I have that in my collection somewhere.
I know I had it as an LP, and I believe I also have it as a download now.
I think download, CD, album.
There you go.
And live, the live album Made in Japan, I do have that. It's a double live set, 1972. I don't know how I got my hands on it. I probably pilfered it from my brother's collection or
something. There you go. That was Ricky. Good steal there.
Side 4 has a version of Space Truckin', which lasts not 10 minutes and 20 seconds, but almost 20 minutes long.
Yeah, and I think if you want to kind of get the feel for what they were like in concert, that's definitely the place to go, because that's a great live album.
Did you ever see them in concert?
No, I did not.
They ever come around?
I don't remember them very much, but also remember that their peak of their career was fairly short.
Yeah,
it wasn't a long peak. So they were doing a lot of opening stuff early on, and then they were doing a lot of opening stuff later on, too.
Remember the song Woman from Tokyo from 1973?
Absolutely, love it.
Yeah, that was the last album that Gillan and Roger Glover would perform together until they got back together again 11 years later. So they have done some reunion stuff since then, haven't they?
Sure.
Now, Ian Paice is the last original Deep Purple member still with the band. John Lord retired from performing in 2002, 20 years ago. Though Glover and Gillan still with the group, along with Steve Morris, who's been with the band since 1994. The new guy.
Yeah, the new guy.
Ritchie Blackmore started Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. What'd you think of Rainbow? You know, Man of the Silver Mountain and...
I was never a huge fan of Rainbow. I couldn't get... why... that kind of happened, and he kind of left Deep Purple, I'm not too sure because I never heard anything that was great out of them.
Yeah.
I really didn't.
I'm not a big...
Certainly nothing that was on par with what he'd done with Deep Purple.
No, it wasn't... I'm not a big fan of Rainbow. I do like, you know, Man in the Silver Mountain. I'm not going to turn it off. It's a decent song.
But, right.
You know, he wanted to first make a solo album. Then he got some guys together for... the Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. So, yeah, not a big fan, but as you said, their shelf life was short. They could have been
Absolutely.
One of those we would have liked to have heard more from. As far as recording and stuff, I think people have still been turned on to some stuff by Deep Purple as we move through the 70s,
sure,
don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think they had such a following at that point that they could have done a lot, yeah. And it was a shame that they kind of really splintered after the big... those two big, huge albums.
Yeah, and of course, the appearance on Dating Game.
Yeah, well, you know, that'll do it.
Frank, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
Next up, our featured artist. Yeah, it was fun, wasn't it? 1973 mm-hmm. and the Psychedelic versus Pop. We're going to wrap up season 5 already next week.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about one of your other favorite acts, solo act, Peter Gabriel.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorites.
So we'll talk about that next week on our final episode of Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, season 5, wrapping up next week. For Frank Ost, I'm Tim Friedman. We'll see you next time.